Hello, and welcome to another episode of Techsplaining. This is Rob Foster, and today I'm here with Mark Rackley. So, Mark, where's everybody at? I guess they bailed, right?
They did. They're like, you know, they hate GDPR. They've had enough. They didn't want to talk about it. They ran away as far as they could. It's like,
I think what they're doing is they're... I think they're out shredding papers is what they're doing.
Possibly.
Speaking of GDPR. Well, let's jump right into it and everything. We have a guest speaker here on the show, Ben Robb, and Ben is a longtime Office Services and Servers MVP. And Ben, I'll just, you know, why don't you tell the listeners who you are and what you do?
Okay, so I work actually in the same team that Rob does. So I talk to Rob all the time, but I've been at Office 365. MVP, previous to that, a SharePoint MVP for, I don't know, 12 years now, is it, Rob? It's a long time anyway. And my day job at the moment is in our organization to lead the risk and compliance and security topics as we engage with our different legal entities and different parts of the business that really worry about risk and our legal exposure and other things like that. So I sort of provide that bridge between the technology and the teams that are delivering solutions for us and the teams that worry and are responsible for mitigating risks. And GDPR is one of those risks. There's many others, but that's one of the things that's definitely a hot topic in my world right now.
So what is the I'll just start by asking a basic question. What is GDPR and why does it matter?
So GDPR is the General Data Protection Regulations, which is a new set of regulations that have come out of the European Union. They were passed a few years back, and there's been a few years of implementation and getting ready for it, but it's coming into force in 10 days' time and on the 25th of May. And it's a big change for how organizations that work in Europe deal with people's information. So, how does that affect organizations outside Europe? If they do any business in Europe, they have to comply to the GDPR. Set of regulations and processes.
So I actually did a little bit of research before the podcast so that I wouldn't sound totally like a Rob Foster on the call. So it seems like to me that essentially GDPR, just in a very broad sense, means that if you're working with a company in the European Union, that you need to be able to tell them why you need to collect information you have on them, what you're going to be doing with it. If they request it be deleted, that you delete it, and that you have audits all along the way to prove that you did what you said you did with their information.
And that's a pretty good starter for 10. So there's a couple of other things that are probably useful to understand as we think about that. The first is around consent, and that's a big step forward from previous iterations of privacy laws in each country. What consent says is you need explicit consent for an organization to use and store data about an individual. And the consent has to be very specific to the purpose that it's been given for. So you can't say, well, I've got some personal data about one of my customers because I asked them to sign up for a newsletter, and I now want to use that in another form. I want to sell that information to another company, or I want to use that information to do some kind of profiling about the user. So the consent that's given has to be explicit. So it has to be something that someone has explicitly signed up for and said, yes, I'm happy for this data to be used. in the form that it said you're going to use it. But then even with that, you then need to make sure that you're not bleeding that information to other activities and processing that your company does with that data. So it's consent's really one of the core planks to the whole pillar.
So then how does it affect you if, let's say, that you're using some third-party service like Salesforce to store your client's information? Is it on Salesforce then to be GDPR compliant, or is it still on you?
No, it's still on you, because you are effectively the data processor, the on-record data processor. So it's your processes that have to deal with, you know, how you manage that data, what you do in terms of the breach notifications, what you do in terms of when the customer comes to you and says, I want to know what you've got stored about me, which is another sort of key aspect to GDPR. You need to be able to look across all of the systems that you have. And if one of those or more than one of those is hosted by a third party, yes, that third party vendor has to satisfy certain criteria about how they deal with data. But more important actually is how you deal with that request. And so, you know, in order to respond to a request for information, it's important that you've got your processes understood and you can respond to that quickly, because there's a limited amount of time that you can respond to that kind of request. You've got 40 days or whatever to respond to that request, and if you don't, you run the risk of being fined by whichever data regulator is in country for that customer.
So what are the implications then for US based companies? I mean, what is their risk here?
So worst case scenario, if you completely ignore this as a US company that has either customers or operations in Europe, if you completely ignore it, you run the risk of being held liable by the EU for a breach. If you lose any customer data, if you don't respond to data requests from customers and so on, you run the risk of being fined, whichever's higher, up to 20 million euros, which is 20 million dollars, US dollars, give or take, or 4% of your annual turnover, not your profit, your annual turnover globally. So, you know, for most organizations, you know, even the size of the organization that Rob and I work with, we're talking, you know, the potential damage and the potential fines that could arise in worst case scenarios are, in potentially in the order of billions of dollars for really big companies. And even for small companies, it's 4% of turnover is a significant amount of money.
So I'm going to play the ignorant American here. But how force companies?
I'm sorry, you broke up at the crucial word.
Just how can the EU enforce those fines on US companies? I mean, this is America.
Well, yeah, it's America, but if you want to do business in Europe, you would have to pay the fine or not do business in Europe. So that's the impact. If you completely ignore it, you don't want to pay the fine, then you cannot do business in Europe.
Okay.
Well, that's terrifying.
$20 million don't do business in Europe.
But it is significant enough to where you want to do something about it, right?
And
yeah, I mean, and you don't want to incur these fines. You want to make sure that you're prepared. What are people doing to prepare for this? Because it seems to be kind of one of those things that I'm seeing is people are spending a lot, companies are spending a lot of money on this stuff, and they're doing things, but what exactly are they doing to prepare?
Yeah, it sounds, this really much reminds me of Y2K, right? Yeah. This is Y2K all over again.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of FUD. There's a lot of people selling some fairly dodgy products. There's a lot of people making, you know, good money as GDPR consultants, if that's a thing. But fundamentally, actually, the impact of GDPR shouldn't be too high in most businesses. If a business is already being ethical and understanding how people are, how people's data is being used within their organization, there shouldn't be a huge uplift to get to be GDPR compliant. The key things are you need to be able to prove that you understand what data you have and you have processes to, you know, deal with finding that information when it's requested. So there's certainly a job of auditing what information is had that you have in your systems and your processes, and making sure that there's a consistent, coherent story to gather that information if needed. And if you do that step and nothing else, your liability is going to be significantly reduced, because you know you've done best efforts to go through and make sure you've got the processes to know what data you have and be able to produce it on demand. The second thing you need to do, and this is the cause of a lot of the spam that we're getting over the last couple of months, you have to gain explicit consent from your from people you have data. So all those spam emails that we're getting to say, please reply to, sign up and give consent for us to carry on emailing you from all the apps you've ever downloaded, all the software packages you've ever looked at, all the vendors who have swiped your data from conference badges and stuff like that. All of those will have gone through that audit process and are now going through the process of cleaning up their mailing lists. So those are the two really critical things that you need to do as soon as possible. You need to know what data you've got and how you're handling that, and you need to gain consent. Once you've got that, you need to change, anywhere you're collecting data from people, you need to change your terms of use and your that kind of thing. So there's work for legal departments to modify the terms of use and the sign up criteria to mention the explicit consent. But apart from that, it shouldn't change your business model too much. Because let's face it, most people in the commercial space don't bother reading the terms of use anyway. So a few extra clauses around consent. I doubt it's going to change most people's worldview on that.
So what if I look at things, and let's just take the scenario of syncing Active Directory into Azure Active Directory, right? So you have information about people there, right? And as soon as you sync it, it goes up to the cloud and could potentially be propagated around the world if depending on where you have data centers and how you roll out OneDrive. I mean, that's a very simple scenario, and I would say a lot of ones that our listeners are encountering. Does it impact them in that way, or what? Because you may or may not know. I mean, obviously, the people that are syncing the data will know, but are there any impacts for hooking this stuff up? Because once you go into the cloud, I mean, it goes everywhere, right? I mean,
I think there's definitely a difference between company data, so data we have we hold about our employees, versus data we hold about our consumers, but for either of those scenarios, the key thing that we need to think about is when we're processing data, whether that's moving it to a cloud service for some other use, whether it's auditing and logging information about how people are using solutions that we're producing. What we need to think about is that a valid use case or process that we either that fits into one of there's sort of six or seven different valid uses of data, and they're pretty broad, and they supersede any privacy concerns. So I'll give you a couple of examples, but there's lots of others. If it's part of the general operations of the company, so in your example, you want to use AD in the cloud as your AD to service as an identity provider to some online applications, some cloud-based apps. That's part of the general business of the company, and you wouldn't need to gain an explicit consent for that because it's part of the operation of the company. Something like logging the behavior of people that use your site from an internal perspective. Again, there are good business reasons, and in fact, in some cases, compliance and regulatory reasons why we need to track that kind of data. So, you know, the fact that behavior is tracked in the Office 365 Unified Audit Log, that doesn't breach GDPR because there is a valid business reason and regulatory reason why we need to do that. So, you know, and I'm not going to go through all of those, but there's equivalent use cases for clients and customers as well, where the processing is part of the general operations of the organization. But that doesn't give you then carte blanche to go and use that data in other ways. So, you know, you have to examine all of the different ways. And one of the things that you do as part of the audit is you basically work out, does this use of, well, what data do we have and how are we using it? And are all of those use cases covered by the sort of standard set of things that are permitted, you know, activities as part of the general operation of the company? And any that fall outside of that, you then need to have a conversation. Do we need to extend the consent for that specific use case, or do we need to stop doing that? And that'll be a, you know, business decision on a case-by-case basis. So, you know, it shouldn't affect internal work. In fact, there are other regulations for other jurisdictions that are more restrictive. I'm thinking Russia as an example, that has really serious restrictions that need paper-based signatories by all your employees before data leaves. But in other cases, for European countries, it's you know, it's no more onerous than what you have today.
Unless those Russians are hacking your website, then it's fine.
Yeah, if the Russians are hacking the website, then yeah, that's a problem. So I mean, that comes on to, you know, one of the other points that so you need to know what data you've got and how you're using it. You need to gain consent, and you need processes to deal with people to as they request information about what data you hold about them. The final sort of main area of focus is around having detailed information about and processes about how you deal with and inform post a breach. So if you have a breach, and that could be you've destroyed, lost, or mislaid information when it shouldn't have been, you have to inform, you have to go through a really rigorous process of informing the relevant people that's happened. And that's, you need to inform obviously the people who have been hacked who have been affected by that data loss. But you also need to inform the government data protection officers in the jurisdictions that you've lost data. So if you've lost data about UK people, you'd go to the UK data protection office. If you go to, if you lose it in France, you go to the French equivalent, and so on. And you have a very, very limited amount of time to do that. So you have 72 hours from when you first discover the breach to when you have to inform the commissioner that you've had a breach. And if you compare that to, you know, a lot of the high profile breaches we hear about in the States, with, you know, it seems like every week there's this is a general thing, actually, it's all over the world. Every week there's announcements from retailers and restaurants and so on that breaches have happened. And sometimes you hear that, you know, they found out about that breach 6 months ago or a year ago or 2 years ago. And so what the notification process is supposed to avoid is making sure that you really, you don't end up with situations where you've got a huge number of records out there that have been lost, with people not knowing that they've been lost for a long period of time. So it's a very, very short window to notify on a breach. Which is all good stuff, right?
I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's stuff we should be doing anyway, right? I mean, it seems like it's common sense kind of stuff, but with consequences.
Yeah. So, you know, when I talked earlier about the fines of 4% turnover and that kind of thing, global annual turnover, you know, they're not going to do that if you've done best efforts, you've got some processes in, you're working on other processes, and you know, you're just unlucky and you fall foul of the commissioners. That's not the kind of thing that they're going to whack that full 4% tax fine on. They'll probably fine you, but not a huge amount. If you willfully ignore this and have no processes in place, and it's discovered that you've, you know, lied to the commissioners and, you know, not, you know, just ignored this whole problem space, and you've not gone through any processes for, you know, e-discovery or you know, information security to lock down your systems, and you get a breach, and you can't tell the information commissioner what was lost, and you had no consent from any of the people's whose data you had. Yeah, that's gonna be where they pile on those points.
But that's a good thing. I mean, I don't see this as a bad thing at all. You know, and I mean, I think you want your people data and your information protected as much as possible. And I think when I first started hearing this, I was like, man, this is just sounds so restrictive, and it's I don't know if it's going to be good for the people, but I think in the end it is. It's really, really good for the people. I don't know if it will have anything as restrictive as much in the US ever, but I get it. I think it's super important.
I would see the US moving in this direction, because it, you know, at some point people are going to get sick of their data being farmed and reused by, you know, other people.
Well, how does this affect like the big Cambridge Analytica stuff, right? I mean, it's going to basically shut stuff like that down for Europeans, right? I mean, I would hope.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue they were operating outside the existing laws anyway, right? So the Data Protection Act in the UK prohibited a lot of the activity that they were doing, which is one of the reasons they've shut down. So, you know,
but I don't think they broke any laws in the U.S. That's the thing, right? Is that I think that stuff's fairly wide open still. And, you know, I still see people after all of the knowledge and stuff on Facebook that are still going out and taking those surveys. Oh, hey, I'm, you know, which bill are you? Or, hey, I'm, you know, I'm this Muppet or whatever it is. You know, I still see those people posting those answers to those surveys. I'm almost like, guys, I mean, are you freaking serious? I mean, you're doing exactly what you know, Cambridge Analytica, you're allowing that same type of stuff to be stolen. I mean, you're giving it away. You're not
says the person who did the personality quiz last week.
who did that?
You did that.
Oh, I didn't do that online. I'm an ENTP by trade. I mean, that's just, yeah. No, I didn't do a personality quiz. That's just what I am.
I've talked
to like professional people about that.
Those are called lawyers, by the way.
Those are called psychologists.
Yeah. Both Rob and I took the same test. Not this online test. You know, probably 200 questions, not like five or whatever it would have been. And was, you know, properly assessed by psychologists and stuff. And yeah, we both came out independently as ENTPs.
ENTP. we were within probably two or three questions of identical answers.
Which is a bit worrying.
Yeah. As long as you stay on your side of the pond, I think we'll be okay.
Having both of us in a meeting at work is got to be exhausting for people that are not extroverts.
Having one of you people in a meeting has got to be exhausting. So how about, so then I'm just going to, what about people who have all these blog sites out there? Like I have a blog site. I have people from the UK who are accessing my blog all the time. They've signed up to get updates on my blog. Is there any risk for me at all in that sort of situation?
So what's the annual turnover of your blog?
As far as what is it?
Do you make any revenue from it? You probably do from ads, but
yeah, I make about less than $200 a year.
Yeah, exactly. They're not going to come after you.
Okay.
So, you know, you're an individual, you're not a corporation, you're not maliciously harvesting that data and selling it on.
Or am I?
Well, you might be. If you are, then, you know, beware if you're doing that.
I'm not, listeners.
Yeah. So I think, you know, individuals, there's some general security and process best practice you should probably be following anyway. But I wouldn't be worried about people coming after you because of your blog site with a couple of hundred people from Europe. Thousands, a couple of thousand from Europe signing up. I think, you know, that's not the kind of thing that you should be worried about. Though was it you that was hacked?
Yes,
it was me. Exactly. Yeah, it was you that was hacked. So you need to sort out your security best practice.
Yes. I'm working on it.
Hey, did you pay the Russians to get your site back?
No, there was nobody helped me for ransom except my hosting company. My hosting company totally disabled my account, so I couldn't like log in to install any plugins or anything to clean it up. And then they pushed me to their partner that charges $500 to clean up your site.
Wow.
I'm like, wow.
You sure it wasn't them that hacked you?
Yes, exactly. A great business practice. But hopefully that's sorted out.
Well, it sounds like you're in the clear though. I mean, and it sounds like it's really targeted at companies that are making money and doing business specifically in Europe with Europeans.
Yeah. I mean, those are definitely the people that you need to worry about. The other people you need to worry about, or the other type of business you need to worry about is if you are a US or Asia-based, Asia-Pac-based company, and you have customers in Europe and you value that business, you need to at least look at how you're addressing GDPR. And, you know, if you go to the Microsoft site, the Microsoft.com/privacy site, they've got some really good assets about how the platform that is Office 365 can help you with this. And there's a few things that are quite interesting. They've got a big case study about how they're dealing with GDPR at Microsoft, which is obviously pretty complex and pretty big because they're a pretty big, complex organization. If you're a medium to large size company, I would definitely look at some of the things that they did and try and adapt it for your use. They built dashboards and used Teamsites and Flow and Power Apps to drive a lot of the auditing and questionnaires that they sent out to all their different parts of their business. And they also used Stream and various other technologies in the O365 space to push out training for all their people about how to deal with data and so on. So, lots of interesting uses of the platform to help manage the process. But then in addition to that, they've got a lot of things that they do by default, which will make you more secure and more able to find information about people through their e-discovery capabilities and their security and compliance center and their scorecards for security and things like that. So, there's a lot of big ticks there. It isn't a magic bullet. You still need to go through and make sure that you're understanding how those processes and how those technologies are going to apply to your business rather than, it just being a tick in the box. So, the tools can help you, but you still need to do the work and get those processes and those systems in place and that data audit done.
How do we, just for, is there a common way people are letting their, people they're working with or, their customer base or whatever it may be, know that they are GDPR compliant? Is it just something that you assume is going to happen? Is there something that me as a person, I'm going to have to sign off on? Or what's the proper way of saying, hey, yep, I'm certified, we're in the clear? Or what would you call that?
So you would need a senior sort of board level or, maybe in a very large organization, maybe one down from the board, but very senior person who is responsible as the data protection officer for the organization. And ultimately, they're liable and they're responsible for making sure that the organization is compliant. Ultimately, this is something, given the potential for fines, that this is something that everyone from board level down needs to be aware of and, be thinking about. But there needs to be an individual that's responsible for driving that program and making sure that it isn't just. So you referenced Y2K. That was a one-off because it was a date, a one-off thing. This is never going to go away. There's every application you put in, every new marketing campaign you do, every new process you implement within your organization, you're going to need to think about privacy. So it needs to be embedded in the culture about everything you do, every way you do business.
Okay. I've got one more random question. So let's say that what initiates these fines? Are you getting audited? Does it have to be one of the people that you're storing data about complaining about it? Or can the EU just say, no, we're going to take a look at you and see if you're compliant?
Realistically, I mean, I guess they could come and audit you, but that I'd be surprised if they did. Realistically, it'll be in response to a breach or a loss of data or a complaint from an individual or group of individuals about how you're managing their data. So, I just don't think they'll have the capacity to audit people That's not how it's worked in the past, and I suspect it's still going to be response to specific incidences. So, you know, you might get away with it for a couple of years, 5 years, but at some point, given the, you know, the nature of this, it's going to come and hit you. And if you've not prepared in any way, it's going to be a problem.
Well, I'm out of questions. Rob, did you have any other questions?
I'm blown away.
I'm educated, I think. I think that...
there's a lot of FUD in the market about this.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not as scary as people are making out. You know, I think a lot of people are trying to make money from it. It's, you know, about generally, do you have good practice about how you host your data? And are you prepared to deal with subject requests from people?
Yeah. And be ethical with their data and just know where it lives.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, it seems like if you're trying to do the right thing as a company and you do get audited or somebody reports you or whatever, if you're trying to do the right thing and not being all shady about it, I think there's a way, you know, there's a way to get through it, right? I think that it seems, now it's serious, don't get me wrong. It's not, you know, a joke if you have to put this, you know, provide this information. But I think if you're trying to do the right thing, it sounds like there's a way to get through that rather than just here's a hard and fast line, do it now, you've got 36 hours to give me the data, or here's your $4 million fine or whatever it is, you know. So it does sound less scary than I was initially thinking in that respect.
Ditto.
Yeah. I think, you know, as I say, the biggest impact for a lot of us is the sheer amount of spam we're getting.
Yeah.
To ask about, can we send you spam? I'm hoping that in 10 days time, that's going to just stop.
Or a month after this actually gets posted,
will be.
Oh, come on now. I'll get this show up here really soon. Well, Ben, do you have anything, I guess, any parting words that you want to, or advice you want to leave our listeners with?
So I would say, you know, if you're thinking about how you're going to respond and you've not started yet, it's not too late. You know, as long as you've got a plan to do it and you're in the process of doing it, you know, that shows goodwill to the regulators, to the commissioners. Start with an audit of all the data that you've got. Change your onboarding process for internal projects and that kind of thing to include, you know, some kind of questionnaire around privacy impact assessments. And once you've got your audit, make sure you're in a position to go and gain consent where possible. And change the way in which you gather information to include explicit consent. There's a ton of material out there. Some of it's good, some of it's not very good, but there's a ton of pro forma questionnaires, pro forma project plans, you know, all of this kind of thing. So, you know, do some research. You shouldn't really have to pay for anything. It's just general project management and you know, general auditing of what content you've got. So it should be something you should be able to do within your organization.
Yeah, and we can have Stephanie add that to the show notes for sure.
Oh, yeah, she'll definitely get that added.
All right, well, Ben, well, thank you so much for making time. I know it's late your time. Mark and I are on Central Time here, and I know you're +6 for us. So, yeah. But thanks so much for making time for it. You know, I'm fortunate I get to talk to you about every day multiple times, and you know, it's always enjoyable to have you on the show. I know you did the SharePoint Pod show several times, but you know, thanks for your advice and your knowledge sharing of this. What has turned out to be not so difficult of a thing to understand, and we appreciate the way you explained it, because I'm hoping it clears up a lot of misnomers that our listeners may have.
No problem. Thanks for inviting me.
So if anybody listening would like to have any questions or whatever, just send us an email at info@techsplaining.net. And we look forward to hearing your questions and hopefully getting your topics, requested topics back on the show. So if there's nothing else, Mark, I will talk to you at the next show.
Sounds great. Thanks, everybody.